We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? Another week, another episode of the Corner Podcast. You already know, Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale in the building. No traveling so far this week. He is well rested. He's back in Vegas lounging up. And that's because we had the UFC fights this past weekend. We were both there chilling. You know, he's a row up from me because he thinks he's fancy now. So he got that prime seat. People noticed him on TV. But, you know, I was in the building. So that was a fun weekend. We got hip hop to talk. Pro wrestling, because we just had a New Japan card. We have a WWE card coming up. A ton on that front. We have a little boxing, finally, for the first time. It's Manny Pacquiao, but it's still some boxing. So we have a packed show today. Oh, man, Andres, how are you feeling, man? You don't have the jet lag this week. You should be nice and fresh.
Yeah, no, man. I got to fly back to New York on Sunday. So, yeah, I'm getting my rest in, and then I got to cover this Pacquiao fight, and then it's off to New York. So I'm all right.
How's the daughter letting you sleep?
She's not. Well, no, she's sleeping a little bit better. It's not, you know, it's not. She's still not. She don't care. Like, she's just in her own world. Like, she doesn't care what daddy's got to do. She don't care what mommy's got to do. Like, my wife is tired as hell. I feel bad for her. Like, I'm going to be gone for another 4 days, so she's going to be alone with my daughter. And my daughter just, she just doesn't care. Crazy.
That's the beauty of parenthood right there. I'm telling you, yeah. y'all got time, man. One more before this train, man. Let's knock out one more. Why not? Let's get a little A junior.
I don't know, man. Like, the more everybody says it, like, when's the next one? And I'm like, yo, like, I keep saying, if this one don't go to sleep, like, my daughter can do, it's crazy, because I've just been boasting about dumb shit, but my daughter can, like, do, like, she thinks she's doing magic tricks, and she's not two yet, and, she'll say, like, you know, where is it? And she'll hide it, and she'll blame it on somebody else and hide the hand. Like, she's 21 months, and she's doing this shit, but she won't sleep.
Yo, acting classes, I'm telling you, bro. I've seen it. She got it. It starts early. Might as well. She could be like the next little Huxtable baby. You know, minus the Cosby controversy. You know, she could be the good version of Raven Simone.
Yeah, I mean, I got approached at the grocery store. Some dude said he was an agent and was like, hey, I want to get your daughter on TV. And I was like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah, so. Be like, bro, I got enough of those. But, I mean, you really should pull the trigger. All the people you know with shows and stuff like that, somebody needs a baby.
Yeah, man, and my homies are getting nominated for Emmys, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here in a second. The black representatives on the Emmys list were strong. If you guys haven't seen it, just head to Andres' Twitter. He tweeted it out. Man, it's looking good out there right now. I wanted to start the show out with something I don't understand, though. Maybe you got your ear to the streets. You know, your niece and nephew is always over at the crib. They kind of, you know, keep you fresh and hip. What is this Drake dance that's going around? I don't understand it.
Well, first of all, it's funny because, like, that song In My Feelings was, like, a song that I just skipped whenever it came on. But now it's, like... It's like the song. So a dude named Shiggy on Instagram created a dance for it, and it became the In My Feelings challenge, and now everybody's doing it. Will Smith shut it down. So, like, after today, anybody that wants to do this, y'all should quit, because Will Smith, who is now the king of social media, absolutely shut this shit down. But yeah,
someone messed up showing him how to use Instagram.
Yo, they blew it. Like, it's one of those things, and somebody said this to me the other day. It's like, when you realize how many stories you have to tell, then, like, because that's what he's been doing a lot of times. Those Fresh Prince stories are amazing. It's like, then you realize that there's another chapter of your career. And, like, Will Smith has this other chapter of his career that I don't know what took him so long to tap into, but I guess things that he took for granted, like access in his life, we want to hear about. And he uses social media. He's become, like, the king of social media. And I love it. At first, I was like, this is corny. But then every time I watched him, I was like, yo, forget the motivational stuff. I'm not a big fan of motivational stuff. That's just me. But everything else, phenomenal.
People love the motivational stuff, too. But it's so funny you say that, because I tell you that all the time on this very podcast. Like, yo, Dre, let's share this. Hey, what do you do here? You'd be like, nobody wants to hear that. Believe it or not, everybody wants to hear that.
Yeah, I guess you're right, man. You know, when we have more time, we'll do more story times with Andreas. Because yes, there are some stories. There's a lot of things I always forget about. I get reminded, like, every now and then by somebody's like, you remember that time? And I'm like, oh yeah. And those are interesting stories. But, you know, it's easy to say for me. Like, it's easy for me to be a therapist for somebody else. But if somebody tells me what I need to do, I'm not really hearing it.
Weird. Yo, we're gonna start a show one day with just BET Andreas stories.
Dude, and it's only 365 days of BET, but there are so many stories. Hip-Hop DX has their fair share of stories, too. Anthony, AJ Springer on Twitter, he worked there with me. He's been party to a lot of that bullshit. But, man, yeah, I saw the industry from ways that people, like, the things don't happen anymore. Like, the way when I was in the industry, because there was no social media like that. You know, it was like MySpace when I was at DX. So it was like, you could still... People were still doing wild shit, but especially like in high school and all that stuff. But, you know, again, one day, somebody got to pay me some money to tell these stories.
So now you're like the old man, though. Now you're back in New York. You're moving it around. You're kind of back in the industry. People are seeing you like, yo, let's chill, come through, blah, blah, blah. But now you're from like the old man perspective. It has to be crazy.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's weird because like when I went to New York last time, you know, everybody, because I hadn't been in Manhattan since I was at BET, and it was like all of my folks was just like, yo, let's go hang, but it's like I don't have time, and it's a weird thing. It's like I really didn't have time to hang out with anybody. It was like, get this work done and go back to the hotel. It's gonna be the same thing this week. We have a big press conference on Tuesday, and yeah, man, it's being a grown-up, man. Being a grown-up in this industry, it's not, no more, you know, Hulkamania running wild. So gotta chill out.
Yeah, all right, Terry Bollea. So this Drake dance, it's the Shiggy challenge. You mentioned Everyone's doing it. I feel like the Fresh Prince just took it up a notch. I feel like we're going to see a lot of young whippersnappers like doing it in random places now. Because now they're like, oh, we got to top Will Smith. Like, he did this on top of a bridge.
Dog.
Like, we're going to see like people doing like this shit while cars are moving.
Listen, if this turns into the 2018 version of planking, I'm out.
I feel like we're headed that way. How long until we see a fighter land a knockout and do the Shiggy challenge?
I mean, they're already doing Fortnite dances. Like, my nephew sees me like, oh, that's on Fortnite. And I'm like, no, that's actually Napoleon Dynamite, but I get it. but yeah, it's bound to happen. It should happen it probably won't happen this weekend, but it's coming soon. Somebody's going to do it.
Yeah,
somebody's
when does an MVP fight again? Because, you know, he's always good for one.
They haven't booked his next fight yet, so we'll see. Whatever the trend is, I'm sure he'll be doing it.
Yeah, that's always crazy. That brings me to another thing. Oh, Drake had a milestone this week. Passes the Beatles for, like, most number one debuts. Ho-hum. Once again, it's this age of media and music, so I don't know how to judge it. Because, like, with streaming and everything else, it's so much different. Word of mouth, accessibility. It's like, yeah, he passed the Beatles, but to get music from the Beatles at that time was astronomical.
Yeah, you had to make an effort. Just like the fact that Michael Jackson sold so many albums, you had to make an effort. And music was more expensive. Like, if you think about it, everybody talks about, like, apps and everything you got to pay for. Netflix and Hulu and iTunes and Tidal. But every week, I was spending $15 on a CD at one point in my life. Like, every week, minimum $15 on a new CD. So it was like, and that you had to actually leave your house, go to the store, and buy the damn album. So, yeah, it's much different when you can sit at home and an album drops at midnight and this endless catalog of stuff that needs to go. It's much different time. I don't think we should be gauging it that way, but Billboard obviously can't figure out another way to do it, so here we are.
Yeah, so every record will just fall sooner or later. Drake's just the latest example. We see, you know, Cardi B doing numbers. No female hip-hop star has done before. And you run down a list and you're like, what? Even though Queen Cardi, BX, shout out all day. Big ups to her. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, should she really be breaking these records a year into the business?
No.
2 years into the business? Everything just seems inflated. Naming her kid Culture was also a big thing on the internet, which I'm for any weird name with a K.
I'm
down with that.
Some names, it's like, I guess some people don't necessarily think when their kids get older, though. I have a friend who named his daughter Alizé Cristal.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, we were 16 and we were young. Not necessarily, I mean, now.
Did your friend have a baby mama? Like, was there no one else with guidance around?
No, I mean, it's him and his girl. Like, they were together for a long time, and that's the name they came up with. I think he was 15, and she was 16 or 17. That's the name they came up with. And I was just like, as you get older, you're like, damn, you named your daughter after not one, but two liquors. But it's like, all right, you got to be careful about these names, but maybe it doesn't matter as much as it once did. I know people look at resumes and still look at names and be like, yo, Deshaun, no thank you. Laquan, uh-uh. They do it, and it's just the way it is.
I almost tell you my name was almost Laquan. It was almost Laquan. Whoa. So I dodged that bullet. Yep, my dad was really into some early 90s New York shit or late 80s New York shit. And Laquan was like Laquan. Yeah, that would have been all bad. This podcast would have been Laquan Dansby and old man Andres Hill.
Yeah, so, that's crazy.
Yeah. Needless to say, I would not have been on this podcast. You would have looked at, like, yo, who is this dude? UFC would have credentialed me. Let's just be real. That's not happening. So, looking at that, in the big picture, did Drake beat Pusha T? Did he win the battle in the big picture? Because it seems like now he's had a number one album without a response to the diss track. Number one album, breaking Beatles records on billboards, the biggest dance in the country, and no one mentions Pusha T.
No, I mean, no, he didn't win the battle. He just, I mean, it's the same thing. In my opinion, I never thought Cannabis lost to LL, but LL was perceived to be the victor by most because he was more popular. So, you know, I mean, Drake, he's a winner in life because he's rich and he makes music for everybody. But in this particular battle, he still lost. I mean, He didn't respond. Again, I get all the reasons why. Like, I'm not one of those. I think it was absolutely necessary he could have responded because that thing could have got really ugly. But, you know, as far as the battle is concerned, you don't win by outselling your opponent unless that's the goal from the beginning. If Pusha came out and said, I sell more records than you, then, yeah, he would have lost. But that wasn't what this battle was about.
Like the 50 Cent Kanye beef? That really wasn't a beef?
Yeah, that wasn't a beef. That was just a publicity stunt for two dudes to get paid.
Yeah, that changed everything.
Yeah.
That's the day people started caring about numbers.
Well, people cared about numbers before, but yeah, it became a whole new thing where everybody was trying to sell a ton of records. First week, that's when first week numbers became like a really big deal.
Yeah, because before it was just whenever you hit platinum.
Yeah, it was like, oh yeah, he went platinum. But yeah, first that was the key. First week numbers became like, that was like all new stories were surrounding first week numbers.
And you were at DX?
At that time, I think that was it. Yeah, I was at DX at that time. So that's what it was all about. Every week. Man. I got the Billboard thing. It was like, what's the first week numbers? Who gives it? Like, we wrote who went platinum or who went gold. But yeah, first week numbers are like drove traffic.
That's crazy. Changing the game. So yeah, I don't think Drake won it either. But I see like a growing momentum. There's a contingent believing that Drake has the one up because he's accomplished these things. Because Pusha T, quote unquote, wasn't able to end him or stop the shine or stop the career. I was like, that's not the point of battling. Like, you don't have to end someone's entire career or, like, even, like, dampen their buzz. Like, to that point, then Meek Mill didn't lose to Drake. And that's the criteria because Meek Mill, we thought, like, damn, this is really going to put a damper on his career. But then he went to jail, got hotter than ever. You know, a couple rich white people backed him. And now he's huge. Again, bigger than ever.
Yeah, see, and that's the weird thing about the industry now, because once upon a time, it was about ending somebody's career and making sure they don't come back. But like I said, if Rick Ross can get back past the fact that he was a corrections officer lying about slanging dope, you can get past anything.
That's the bar? So that's the bar we set? Like, yo, Rick Ross was a corrections officer and not selling drugs, so we good. Anything under that, you're all right.
Pretty much.
That's bananas. Let's move on to the Emmy noms, because we touched on it a little bit earlier. We talked about it last year. We were surprised. Gambino won last year. Or, excuse me, Donald Glover, for acting purposes. Nominated again twice this year. Netflix surpassed HBO for total number of nominations, which had everyone talking. It seems like, you know, HBO was just that gold standard for a while with original content. Now we're seeing HBO, the Netflixes, the Hulus, all of these places getting nominated. What's the biggest shift this year? Or is it, you know, the number of black actors and directors and producers nominated? What's the biggest thing that stands out?
I mean, it's that. I mean, the industry is, it's black season. It's still black season. Sooner or later, it's going to end. But black season is in full effect. And the fact that we're seeing, it's not even the fact that we're seeing just African-Americans on television. It's we're seeing the dynamic and this diverse diversity of African Americans on TV, the differences in Atlanta versus Insecure. It's not like the 90s where it was all like gangbanger movies. It's like there are a ton of different walks of life for African Americans. So it's pretty dope, man. It's pretty dope to see. It's dope to see Cat Williams get nominated for Alligator Man. Like, that's crazy.
Which I was so surprised about. But I mean, that character was so funny, but it was such a short character.
I mean, it was a short character, but it was so impactful in that episode. And it carried so much weight throughout the season. This past season of Atlanta, I know a lot of people early on didn't get it, but that was some really, really good television.
It was better than between the first season.
Yeah, I mean, there were two different. It was a completely different show. Between that and the second season of Glow, holy shit. The second season of Glow is so good. It might be my favorite show.
I have. Right. A 4-day weekend, and I'm just diving straight into it.
No, it's going to take you like 2.5 days to watch it because they're like 30-minute episodes. It's so, so good. And I'm not even saying that just as a wrestling fan who grew up watching Glow. Like, my mother worked at the Riviera where they used to record Glow, and I went to like a couple as a kid. Funny thing was, I didn't even know my mom worked at the Riviera. My grandmother used to just take me. It's a long story. But, yeah, really long story. But, yeah, the Riviera and Glow, like, I had an attachment to Glow as a kid, but this show is so good. The Alison Brie, like, I mean, those who remember Awesome Kong, or Karma in WWE. She's great in this show as Welfare Queen. Oh, man, so good. It is so good. Y'all have to watch it.
Yeah, I can't wait to dive into that. And, yeah, just seeing all the nominations and stuff nominated. Two people not nominated that really have me tight. Desus and Mero. How do they get snobbed?
Man, I don't know, man. I mean, like, I guess it's still kind of like a niche show, I guess, that feels like it only hits a certain demographic because it comes on at late night. It's not as big necessarily as those other shows. But, you can't argue the impact of Desus and Mero and how quickly they came on the scene and just completely obliterated everything in their path. It was appointment television. It made watching TV, like, necessary at night.
Yep. Watching it, streaming it, like, the GIFs created for it, the memes, it rose that entire platform. I ain't watch Vice. No one was watching Vice.
And nobody will now that they're gone.
Yeah, and it was just like, it was the reason to watch that channel. Big Mac says all the time, Big Mac used to go home and be like, no, hold on. It's Desus versus Mero time. Busy as hell, doing tons of radio, all this stuff. Stop everything he's doing to watch Desus versus Mero at night. And there's a lot of people like that. It was so real, so genuine. Being from New York, being in New York a ton, everything they talked about, they were able to branch out and become mainstream, but their content was still New York-based. They're talking right about Fordham Road. Like, it was crazy to see. Man, so I can't wait for them to be on a bigger platform. We'll see it about next year. But yeah, they need to stop hating on that. That and us getting a podcast award is going down. I know you hate awards. I don't care. I'm pushing the movement. You're the worst person with awards. Is it ever your goal? You are so weird. Like, with any type of notoriety, you'd be like, I don't care, man.
No, I don't care. Like, I guess it's because I used to care. At one point when I was younger, I used to care. Like, I used to care what was going to be on my tombstone when I died. Like, I used to care about all those things. And at a certain point, I just stopped caring.
I feel like that's a big thing to care. I feel like that's a reasonable thing to care about.
Yeah, but to me, like, I mean, it's just the way I move. It's just I really don't care. I got to the point where, especially now that I have a daughter, like, I really don't give a shit about what people think of me on the outside. Like, it's about getting the job done, having integrity. And I realized that, you know, if you appeal to the masses, okay, I'll put it like this. Drake makes mindless music, right? It's enjoyable, but there's not a lot of thought into it. But the masses are going to remember Drake for that part of his career.
Yeah.
But that's never my goal. Like, I never wanted to sell. Like, if I was a rapper, I wouldn't want to sell a million records. I want to actually affect people with my music. And those who are affected by my music, if it's 10 people, I'm happy about that. I don't need an award for that. You know what I'm saying? If somebody ever tells me what you do affected my life, that's more important than getting some award. Don't get me wrong. I appreciate the award, but that's all I want to do, man, is affect people's lives and influence people to do things. I don't give a shit about a goddamn award.
That is a beautiful old man rant. I love that. I hear the passion behind that, but we're going to get you a damn award. Something. Listen, Ariel's on ESPN. MMA awards ain't giving Ariel nothing. I will write in every day and get the sporting news something. Don't play me. I will ballot stuff. I'm a Yankees fan. I am good at ballot stuffing. I will vote every day. Yeah, wait until you see Giancarlo Stanton in this All-Star game.
Wow.
This is what we do. So, we're going to get you this award. Mark my words. Talking about that, ballot stuffing, fixing things, brings me to my general overview point of this week's podcast. And we said it on Saturday when we were both right next to each other for the UFC fights. And at the end of the night, you look over and it's hard to think. Everything is pro wrestling.
Indeed.
Everything, everything, everything. And it's incredible to realize. And that was kind of like the theme of our weekend. It was like, you know what? We can't go to the New Japan show. We talk about WWE riding all the time, all this stuff. This is probably the least we talk about WWE at a MMA event, by the way. It wasn't even on our mind. We didn't really talk about it. And then guess what? Boom! Pro wrestling smacks us in the face. So, before we get to UFC 226 and its pro wrestling aspects, there's a kind of a bigger beef, heel face, dare I say, in MMA right now. Dana White versus Brendan Schaub. You just wrote about it, saw your article. And everyone's talking about it on Twitter and the MMA community. Eskimo Brothers damn near might be trending by this point. Shout out to the league. It's crazy to see them go back and forth in such a public arena. Is this good or bad for the UFC? Dana White's the boss. It has to be. There's no middle ground. As a boss, is it good or bad? Can you do this as a boss? You are now a boss. We talked about last week. You can't just go wild out, Mike Perry. Like, there's certain things you can and cannot say in public.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So in the case of Dana White, like, he's completely out of bounds. Like, when I was editor of Hip Hop DX, when I was editor of any of the sites that I worked at, my biggest thing was to never respond to the comments in the comment section. Like, because you need to be above that. Once you lower yourself to that level, you're essentially a peasant. And you're essentially one of them. And it's open field because everybody's going to shit on you. So as a 49-year-old man, to engage in an argument with a former UFC fighter who got cut, who's making a decent living, even though I'm not a fan of what Brandon Schaub does when it comes to boxing, the man is making a better living outside of the UFC than he was inside of it.
Yeah, I mean, because he lost most of his brain cells inside of it.
Yeah. So to argue with him on Israel Adesanya's Instagram page is absolutely out of bounds and ridiculous. It means that Dana White, like, you should have better things to do than to be arguing with somebody on Instagram. More importantly, like, you got business to take care of. And it's like, when you stoop to that level, man, it's open field. But that also proves that Dana White has this massive ego that, like, we'll talk about it. He buried Francis Ngannou after that terrible fight at UFC 226. As a promoter, when you're burying your own fighters, that's not good business.
No, you're hustling backwards.
He's not practicing good business. And even though, like, people might find it entertaining, it's like, you don't need to do that, man. Like, you really don't. Like, who cares about Brandon Schaub? Like, dog, y'all cut him. I don't look for people, like, people that I fired over my lifetime, I don't go back looking for them to diss them. I don't. I leave them alone. Like, why? Why are you going to go back to that? So Danny should have left that shit alone. And now Brandon Schaub looks just, he has the upper hand.
Yeah, I mean, once you fire someone, you're kind of always in the upper position. Like, what do you have to say to them? Like, anything they say, you just be like, okay, I fired them. Like, this is why they're saying it. And his critiques weren't wrong.
No, they weren't.
It's not like he was lying on you. Like, just keep quiet. Like, you're just bringing attention to your flaws by trying to defend them. Like, there's no defense of that. He's lucky. Stylebender, we'll talk about him, is going to be a star as long as he keeps winning. But that's not with the help of Dana White in the UFC. He's just going to be himself. And, you know, probably around that time, the ESPN deal is going to kick in. It's going to be a lot more eyeballs, and he's going to be right place, right time, right knockouts to be the next star. But Dana White's not helping that. Like, the platform helped that. Like, to me, this argument, and we'll talk about Brandon Schaub's response in a second because that's hilarious. But the argument, like you said, makes him feel like he's on Schaub's level. It makes him feel normal. He's touchable. That's one thing they always said, like, in history class and all that stuff. I was a huge history buff. They're like, kings and kingdoms fall when the people underneath you realize that you're touchable.
Yeah.
And that you're normal. Outside of that, like, they always put you on this pedestal. That's why you can rule over them. But once you start coming down to their level, they know you're touchable. 300 fans. Like, as soon as you see Xerxes get cut, it's like, oh, he could bleed blood. That was the end of it. Like, once you're human, it's a wrap for you. And he's just taking himself down. It's going to get to the point where WME, who has no connection, no true connection to Dana White, is going to have to make a decision. He's going to put them in that situation where it's going to be a him or us situation by trashing these fighters, by not paying people when they show up for their job, like Brian Ortega. And that shit comes out. When starts cutting the bottom line, he's going to put them in a nasty spot.
There's also this thing I want to point out. It's what I learned, because once you're in, like, a senior position somewhere, or you're the president of something, people tend to speculate how things operate, but they really don't understand how they operate. And when people criticize what you do, whether this be Dana White, whether this be myself, whether this be you and what you do, they don't really understand your job. But when you start arguing with them, you can't win. Like, you truly cannot win that kind of an argument. Like, maybe there's other things going on in the WWE, right, that leads to shitty writing that we just don't know about, whether it be stakeholders or whoever. Like, we're going to criticize it. But if Vince comes out and starts bashing everybody that criticizes him, it opens that thing wide open. Because it means, one, we're getting to Vince. Mm-hmm. And two, our opinion actually matters to him. So like once you, like if people told me at Hip Hop Days, like I used to read the comments and people would shit all over some of the stuff that we did. Now the traffic was great, but I used to see the comments. Now if I let those people affect me, then it would affect my work. And then it would, people might not, the allure of DX might not be there. Like you have to be, you have to treat yourself like a senior executive. You have to treat yourself as an adult. Like you don't argue with the kids. The inmates don't run the asylum, but that's what Dana does.
And he's been a senior executive for so long, you would think he would learn.
You would think he would.
But I feel like the Fertittas, and that's one thing Shab said that I think that he might be spot on about. I think the biggest thing the Fertittas did, Lorenzo specifically, is being able to put their hand on Dana and be like, chill.
Yeah.
Like they were the people reining him in. And that's why you see Conor McGregor bringing in Fertitta and taking shots with him. And say, no, I discussed business with him and all this. Like, Dana was running around kind of just willy-nilly. But at the end of the day, when shit had to get done and stuff had to be reined in and business had to be had, you know, Fertitta could just tell Dana, chill, let's do it. And it gets done the right way. He doesn't have that. It's the Kanye syndrome, right? Like, Kanye loses his mom. Who's there to tell him no anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's that. Like, if anybody watched the episode of Power this week, but yes, I'm still watching this damn show. But, there's a scene where Rotimi, who's now been elevated, is dealing with one of his friends who's now underneath him. And he doesn't treat him like he tries to leverage his power by arguing with his friend and telling him that he's the boss. Well, when you do that, that friend no longer respects you and will be the most likely one to stab you in the back eventually. So it's like you have to be careful with who you argue with and how you argue, because the fans will turn on you. Your fighters will turn on you. Like, come on, man. You got to handle yourself better. Like, I've always appreciated Dana White's passion towards the sport itself. But at a certain point, you got to stop dealing with fighters the way that you deal with fighters. Like, and become a senior in a senior position trying to uphold your brand, the brand of the company, not your own personal brand.
Yeah, and the Dana's been brand is not strong.
No, not right now.
And we'll get into the pay-per-view numbers and everything else. It needs pro wrestling right now. And you see that. Now it's really blurring lines. And if they have anything, they have those diehard fans that's been there from the beginning still. And they're kind of starting to alienate them. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can grab mainstream media. Because if not, some of these diehards are going to fall off too. And they're going to be in a world of hurt. The biggest thing to Brendan Schaub, just complete bashing. Like, this is a hip-hop diss track. This is shots fired all the way around. It's Ether. It's every dope diss track. He put it out there, but just enough to be like, you know, I got something for you later. He ends it. Also, the last line. Also, this is no way Eskimo brothers should talk to one another. Last warning. With the shh emoji. Yo, he hit him with the Jay-Z. He hit him with the, yo, you say one more thing to me, I'm going to put out my super ugly verse, and you're going to be tight. It's hilarious. The Eskimo Brothers line now, people are like, yo, who did Schaub smash? Who did Dana smash? It's hilarious. He created this whole thing. And once again, it shows that they're on the same level, right? And it's stupid, and it's guy's way of thinking. But if, you know, I go out, and there's a Push a T song like this, but if LeBron smashed this chick and I smashed this chick, oh shit, I'm on the same level as LeBron somewhere internally. Like, you're no longer untouchable. Like, I feel like he did that to Dana White. Like, yo, we're on the same level. You smashing the same chicks I'm smashing. Like, that's the whole point. Like, yo, don't get cute. You ain't doing too much. Listen, B, we smashed the same girls. You might have a little bit more in your bank account. So what? We're on the same level. Be quiet. And he shushed him. That's so disrespectful. Shushing somebody, a grown-ass man. And, man, I can't wait. I hope Dana responds, because he can't help himself. I assume he's going to respond. And I hope Shaw puts it all out on tape.
Yeah, I mean, it would be wise for Dana White to take a step back, because, again, nothing good is going to come out of this. If he continues to argue with his fighters on a public forum, like, you lose. Like, people don't like you anyway. So why continue an argument, especially when it gets really personal, when it talks about, you know, Ronda Rousey and CM Punk and Eskimo Brothers with a fighter, it looks really bad on the. I mean, you're the promoter. Like, if Manny Pacquiao said, "Hey, me and Bob Arum are Eskimo Brothers," people would look at Bob Arum like he's crazy. So Dana White's just got to lay off of that. Like, you can't be arguing on, especially when you're arguing on somebody else's, you know, social media page.
about one of your fighters' social media pages.
There's no reason for that, and it's uncalled for. And Dana White took it too far, and now he's got to deal with it. So his best bet is to put his ego aside and not say anything else.
What is Jay Prince doing? Can we send him to Dana's house real quick? Can he fly into Vegas? You know, you just squash the beef.
Probably not.
He seems to be that's his role right now. They could talk Zuffa boxing while he's there. Help Dana out with that, because that looks like that's a whole different wild situation. Let's talk about the Ultimate Fighter, though. We had the Ultimate Fighter on Friday, UFC 226. I showed up for the Ultimate Fighter, ate some pretty good Asian food that they had there, had a nice little plate, was chilling, had to get back to Summer League, ended up being really good games at Summer League, so I didn't come back, watched Stylebender from my laptop. You, though, sat the entire time. This card, Stylebender didn't come on until 1 a.m. East Coast time. And the fights before it left a lot to be desired. Let's just be nice right now. We've been talking a lot about Dana and his product. They left a lot to be desired. The people who did stay up that long were in for a treat, though. Adesanya, he looks like he's the real deal. I haven't, and you don't want to rush to judgments or be too crazy and step over the line or be the king of hyperbole, but he has a lot of John Jones in him.
Yeah, I mean, he has a lot of John Jones and Conor McGregor in him. Like, not from a personality perspective, he's a great talker. He can sell himself. From a technique perspective, he's a kickboxer. He's a lauded kickboxer who came to the UFC and has kind of figured it out. He's developing his all-around game. And he's the type of guy who just seems like he's ready to be a star. It's a matter of whether the UFC is going to push him or not. He can push himself as much as he wants, but the UFC is always the king of this. And if they get behind it, which it seems like they are, and he continues to win, I mean, yeah, we're in for a treat. It's just unfortunate that a majority of MMA fans probably went to sleep because the card was paced so terribly and had so many bad fights that it was really a chore to get to the Adesanya fight, who fought Brad Tavares, who is a legitimate middleweight, and dominated him from bell to bell.
Yeah, the elbow that cut Tavares was just so sick. Like, it was amazing, just the short elbow with the lead hand grabbing Tavares' wrist to pull him in close. Just so much stuff that happened in a matter of, 2 seconds to land that blow, which was the changing blow in the fight. Like, it took it from, okay, he's doing really well and winning this fight to, oh, he's dominating it.
Yeah.
And, it was a whole nother level. So that was incredible on its own. The UFC does have a problem with these Ultimate Fighters. It looks like they're going to continue pumping them out, and we're going to get finales. So on the finales, there's no intrigue to, oh, my God, who's going to win it. Like, they don't have to be co-mains. Now there's two different Ultimate Fighters per season, so you're wasting these co-main slots. Like, I wouldn't mind them opening up the main card.
Yeah, and that's a smart thing. I mean, I get it. You want to do these events because you want to showcase some other talent. We got Sean O'Malley last year. This year we get Israel Adesanya. So it makes sense, but now, because there's no intrigue in the Ultimate Fighter, the winners. I know they want to get some of the other talent on the card, but you guys have so many goddamn cards. Figure out how to spread them out. Like, Violent Bob Ross, like Luis Pena, was an exceptional talent and cleaned house fight.
He wins that if he doesn't get hurt.
Probably. He probably does win it. I mean, he looks like he has the talent to do so. But that's a great platform for him to fight. They're just really terribly paced. The thing is, there's so much, such a huge gap in between fights. For no reason. Like, just go to the next goddamn fight. I don't understand.
Yeah, there's no reason to just drag it on. And then having 6 fights on the main card instead of 5.
Yeah, unnecessary.
Seemed like it added an entire 2 hours to the card. But I wouldn't mind just getting those out of the way as soon as the main card comes on. You have those guys fight. And then you have 3 legit fights with people actually signed to the UFC, with UFC experience, that'll probably lend to more exciting fights after.
Yep.
So that's a change I think we need to see. What's next for Stylebender? Who would you give him? Mr. Rankings committee guy?
It's tricky because, I mean, like, Paulo Costa, Borrachino looked great in his fight with Uriah Hall.
Oh, he looked incredible.
And Uriah Hall didn't make a bad account for himself either. So I personally like to see him fight one of those guys, but I have a feeling they're going to downshift a little bit and have him maybe headline another card, a co-main event, another card against a decent middleweight. I'm just really not sure who. They don't want to put him in there with Borachina because they don't want to knock off two prospects, one of the two prospects. So you have to find somebody who's a middleweight, who's solid. I don't know. Anybody come to your mind?
Man, the top is so veteran heavy that it's hard to find someone. Like, you know, as far as moving up to fight. I would like Derek Brunson. Because I think Brunson will strike with him. Brunson could take him down. But I think he's probably the least dangerous of the guys ahead of him. So if he has to move up, I think a Derek Brunson fight is next. I don't want to give him Dave Branch. Because Branch is crazy as shit. Gaslam is four, fighting for a title. Jacare, Weidman, Rocco. Like, it's dangerous. And Rocco is probably moving up. So he probably bump everyone else up. Yoel Romero's talking about getting a title shot. Even though he came off a loss. I don't know how you justify that. But he wants a Cormier title shot at 205. It's like, how about you fight at 205 first? Before you get a title shot. And Weidman's so dangerous. But he's going to have to fight these guys sooner or later. Unless he pulls a Conor move and just waits it out.
I mean, like I said, I don't think they'll put him in there with the top five. You know, Brunson, I believe he's booked for...
He has a fight coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, there could be somebody. It could be like Uriah Hall. You know, it could be a Thiago Santos or Christoph Jocko.
Yeah, he has Anthony Carlos Jr. at 227. But it's close enough to, you know, kind of put them together.
Yeah, and I'm expecting, if not the next pay-per-view for... Adesanya to be on the New York card. That's where I expect him to be.
Yeah. But if not against those guys, he does have to downshift.
Yeah, like it'll be like, I don't want to say a showcase fight because there's still tough opponents there, but it'll be somebody that it'll be ranked beneath him. It won't be a fight that puts him immediately into the title picture.
Thiago Santos was the backup, right?
Yeah.
They had him weigh in just in case.
Yep.
That'll probably be the next fight.
Possible. We'll see.
Because Santos is 13. It's a guy who's a threat, but not too much of a threat. Elias Theodoro, I think he runs through, but that's also a possibility. And the guy has nice hair. So, I mean, if you have to showcase someone, showcase a guy with nice hair.
Wow.
UFC 226 main card, which looked really good on paper. I thought the card was fairly exciting outside of one fight.
No, I mean, this was a good card, man. I mean, 226 was a loaded card. You know, the fact that we lost Brian Ortega and Max Holloway sucked. But, you know, I mean, the Felder-Perry fight was very good. I mean, obviously...
Khalil Rountree's upset of Gohan Sakai.
Yeah, Gohan Sasaki. I mean, blowing him out, nobody really saw that coming. I mean, this was overall a very good card. And, I mean, UFC needs more cards like this but that are exciting with great matchups, but we don't get that all the time. So, you know.
It's too many damn cards.
That's the problem. Like, there's one this weekend that with Junior Dos Santos fighting. It's like, really?
Unnecessary like, card, yeah.
Yeah, there's just a lot of cards. But, I mean, we can kind of talk about the big thing out of 226 is obviously Cormier beating Stipe, which I predicted, but... I did not see a first-round knockout. Cormier's going to knock him out in the first round. But what a fucking – I mean, come on, man. Daniel Cormier, like, the daddest heavyweight of all time. Like, this dude is round, is missing a tooth, a pops. Like, a legit – like, I wear the knee-high socks with the stripes on them type of guy. And just flatten Stipe Miocic in the first round and become the champ. Like, it's such a great story. And I know the whole John Jones thing is always going to loom over him. And he's like the Joe Frazier of MMA. But, man, you can't help but be happy for that guy.
Dre, I've been waiting for this. It's taken almost a year, Dre, since he got knocked out. Right before him and John Jones fought. I said, if he beats John Jones this time, Cormier has an argument to be, and he has a path to be the first or second greatest fighter of all time.
Yes.
You laughed me out the building.
I did.
We stand here today, and Cormier has a case, a legit case. There's plenty of hot takes flying around that says he is the second best fighter of all time. First, for some people, given John Jones' records and popping, some people disqualify John Jones for popping for steroids or dick pills or whatever it may have been. And having two suspensions and everything that's going. Cormier, you know, the clean record, the no PEDs, the no nothing, that matters to people. They can honestly say Daniel Cormier is the greatest MMA fighter of all time. I was right, Dre. That's it. This is a year where, you know what, you just be like, you know what, Kel, you are right on some stuff. Shout out to Danny Acosta in our group chat, Reverse Rat Pack. Kelstradamus needs to catch on. Because Dre, I'm right.
Yeah, but he lost to John Jones, though. The premise of your argument
is to be fair, he had a no contest.
Yeah, to be fair, he got kicked in the head and got knocked out. To be fair, nobody's going to remember that it was a no contest. Let's be honest.
His record says such. But no, you're right. Like, we saw him get knocked out. He got knocked out.
Yeah, it's always going to be a problem, right? Like, so Cormier is in this interesting position.
But he's where, the second. He has argument to be the second best fighter of all time.
I mean, and who's number one?
John Jones is the greatest fighter of all time. John Jones right now should be heavyweight champion if you look
at it. Is he better than George St. Pierre?
Daniel Cormier?
Yeah.
Yeah, dominated two divisions. His belt wasn't a one-off against a Michael Bisping with one eye on his way out. Like, his belt was in a division he has, 13 wins in, where he was a champion before in Strikeforce. He has two heavyweight titles in arguably the two best promotions for heavyweights.
Here's my counter. Who's the greatest boxer of all time?
Oh, yeah, that's not fair. Sugar Ray Robinson.
And how many divisions titles did he win? Like four?
Yeah, three or four. Like, he didn't move up too much. He didn't dance around.
Manny Pacquiao won 8 divisions, world titles.
Boxing's ridiculous, though, Dre. Like, if they fought every 4 pounds, Cormier would have 10.
My point is that, yes, there's much credit for Cormier because he also beat Stipe Miocic, which is a huge deal. And the only person he couldn't beat was John Jones. But the fact is, he couldn't beat John Jones. Now, in two fights, it feels like they have to fight again. But Cormier is nearing 40. I don't necessarily see him doing it. It's going to be a caveat for the rest of his life.
I think John Jones fights the winner of Brock, DC.
I don't necessarily think that Cormier continues fighting. That, like, I'm not sure because I think he's really serious about this March 20th deadline.
Yeah, I'm
a little weary of this. Now, George St. Pierre beat everybody in the welterweight division. Everybody that stepped up to fight him, he beat him.
He also lost.
Yeah,
he lost someone a lot less than John Jones.
Yeah, but that run that St. Pierre had was like, it's just like the Anderson Silva run.
Like, Daniel Cormier's run was insane. What do you like? Where do we argue? Like, his run through Strikeforce and then the UFC when he started, those names are legit.
Well, here's the argument. Josh Barnett was washed up. Bigfoot Silva was never really that good. When he arrived in the heavyweight scene wasn't that good. The best heavyweight he beat was Stipe Miocic. I mean, hands down.
And he's the best heavyweight in UFC history?
Arguably. I mean, but is he the best heavyweight of all time? Like, there's so many arguments here because Cormier's career is not done. So what if he loses to Brock Lesnar? Feasible.
No, very feasible because the size metrics. That's why I picked him to beat Stipe. Like, Stipe didn't have any crazy attributes that were hard to overcome. He was smaller than DC for all purposes on the scale. Brock Lesnar is going to be 300 pounds on Fight Night.
So for me, there is a legitimate argument here where DC stands all time. And it feels like, he doesn't have a ton of fights, but he's done just about everything you could possibly do. But then the argument is, well, shit, he didn't beat John Jones. And that's why Joe Frazier is never going to be the greatest heavyweight of all time, because he couldn't beat Muhammad Ali. But he did beat Muhammad Ali at least once. But he couldn't beat him the other two times. Cormier is 0-1 and one no contest. You have to beat John Jones to be the greatest of all time. I can't give it to you without beating him. And even if John Jones
popped, so we're not taking into account that he clearly popped.
Well, it's like the baseball argument. Who's the greatest baseball player of all time? And a lot of people argue Barry Bonds, but
Barry Bonds Barry Bonds is a great. He might have been the greatest beforehand. That's
always my issue with Barry Bonds.
John Jones included. John Jones, without any drugs, I think is the greatest fighter on earth. He took him just to be an asshole.
So it's really tough, man. But there is legitimacy in this discussion. Now that he's a two-division champion, there's legitimacy in the discussion. But it's murky as hell because he lost to John Jones. And his career is not over yet. Yeah. And then you look at guys like Demetrius Johnson. I mean, unfortunately, Conor McGregor, we don't know what the hell he's doing to even prove himself to go to another weight class. But if he did, then what would we say about him? Fedor, who had one of the greatest runs of heavyweights of all time, but his career went too long. Mm-hmm. Like, he's still fighting. So it's like, it's really hard, but he's in that conversation. It's hard to put 10, you can't put 10 fighters ahead of Daniel Cormier, in my opinion.
But
when you get to the top five, it gets very like, where do I put him? Like, yeah, he beat Stipe, and we're still happy about it, but damn, those John Jones losses suck. They suck.
He just didn't have the put your stamp on it, crazy 8-fight run. And I'll give you that in the argument for GSP. GSP was like, I have the belt, and this run with the belt after he regained it was like, no one's touching this. And it was like a signature run. John Jones has the signature run.
And then furthermore, it's like, then you have moments, right? The fact that Conor McGregor knocked out Jose Aldo, who was widely recognized as the number two or number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world in 13 fucking seconds, it's hard to beat. And I know people are critical because Conor hasn't fought, but, dude.
The way he beat Eddie Alvarez is one of the best the divisions ever seen.
It's like, dude, like... The Conor McGregor argument, you may not like him, but he beat Jose Aldo in 13 damn seconds, and then he moved up and beat Eddie Alvarez, who was a champ in Bellator and seemed like an unstoppable force at one point in his career.
And believe you me, if he comes back, Conor McGregor's coming back to become welterweight champion. Do not let Colby Covington win that belt, because Conor will fight. He will fight Khabib, win or lose that fight. He will talk Papa Dana. You know, he'll just say, you know what, I can't make the weight cut, blah, blah, blah. I had too much time off. I didn't feel good. I got to go to 170. And he will get the immediate title shot if Colby Covington is champion. Tyron Woodley is a tall task. I don't think he takes down Woodley. But Covington, I think he welcomes that challenge. Like, he looked at RDA. Like, yo, I'm ready.
Yeah, there are a lot of weird chapters in MMA right now. There are a lot of them. But Cormier, fortunately, the John Jones thing is going to be the one thing that's going to hold him back. And it's always going to be that way, because even though the no contest, you know, that he got knocked out, he still lost the first fight. So it's like, it's hard. It's really difficult.
Yeah, does John Jones get a pass for being a cheater?
I mean, that time, no. But when he beat Cormier the first time.
In general, like, in all your career, does cheating once take away everything? Does A-Rod... Obviously, taking steroids diminished the first 8 years of his career.
And that's the crazy part. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Because that's what we got to look at.
John, we all kind of assume, and it's always been like, you know, hearsay or a little more than hearsay, and you know, in the back rooms, and it's one of our like journalists, hush-hush, not-so-secrets between each other that we really can't write, because you can't write shit without multiple sources and hard proof. But John Jones and the drug problem, like commercial drugs, like street drugs, has been around for quite some time. He's admitted to the weed problem. Cocaine has been a factor for quite some time. So Jones has done drugs for a while. Who is to say steroids hasn't been one of those drugs from the onset?
It's hard. Sugar Ray Leonard was a cokehead at one point. You know what I'm saying?
Shit, you can do a lot of stuff. Shout out to the Mets team in the 80s. You do a lot of drugs and be great.
I mean, yeah, Dwight Gooden and like Dr. K. I mean, Dr. K and goddamn Daryl Strawberry were high all the time.
Constantly. Like, between innings.
So, it's just really difficult. But the fact that, Cormier is the feel-good story of mixed martial arts. And he's the guy who you look at, should never be a world champion in any division, is a two-division world champion. And you genuinely are happy for him. And people that booed him, who used to boo him, you guys are assholes.
Yeah, man. The guy dances with chicken and cupcakes. Put respect on his name.
A little embarrassing. But, yeah. I mean, he's done what he's had to do, man. And he's got a great career. And I hope... His career doesn't end as the guy who can't beat Jon Jones, but he's pretty much done it all. He deserves his payday against Brock Lesnar.
Yo, did Popeyes bring him his bucket? I know he used to get a bucket of Popeyes after every win.
That's a good question, man.
I didn't know this. Popeyes is in the news. Pac-Man Jones dropped a bucket of Popeyes to whip some ass.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
But we need an answer from Popeyes. That's journalism right there. That's deep digging. Yeah. Does Cormier get his bucket of chicken? Then going past that, UFC 226, we have, of course, Daniel grabbing the mic and cutting the finest of wrestling promos in the middle of the octagon. A promo so good, it made Vince McMahon walk in to Raw Monday and slap Roman Reigns. Like, this is how you make me money. That's how good that promo is. And came out, called Brock Lesnar to the octagon. There was a push. Of course it was staged, people. If you think that was real, the street fight between Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, where the entire locker room had to pry him apart, was also real. He came out, took the push. His little corner man, who was like 4 foot tall, tried to stand up and help him. And then they realized, oh, it's a work. And the two stood toe-to-toe. Brock Lesnar, of course, in his snakeskin boots with a full dress outfit, showing that you can always take the boy out the country, can't take the country out the boy, standing in the ring. And the world exploded. We were all like, what the hell just happened? People were upset that, you know, fighters were on set publicly on Twitter. Like, how could our sport steep to this level? Daniel Cormier said, you know what? Stay broke, because you ain't doing this shit. You ain't doing nothing. He's out for the check. Dre, did they play it right with the promo?
Absolutely. I mean, come on, man. Like, the finest
that's
moments.
That's the pro wrestling in us.
Yeah, like, dude, the finest moments in all combat sports are pro wrestling. Muhammad Ali, his career was modeled after Gorgeous George, who was a pro wrestler. And that's why we love the Louisville Lip, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali. That's why we adored him when he fought, because he talked that trash and he backed it up. In boxing and MMA and pro wrestling, like, everything is pro wrestling. Like, the drama, the spectacle, the scene, the entry, like, that is pro wrestling. Whether you like it or not is what attracts you to the sport. The reason why the majority of this country tuned in to Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, was not because it was supposed to be competitive. It's because it was fucking pro wrestling. It was two guys talking shit to each other, cutting promos on one another. They didn't really not like each other, and everybody knew that. But they just, and maybe some things went a little bit too far, like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. But it was good television. And that's what pro wrestling has always been, is good television. Hip-hop is pro wrestling. The greatest beefs are pro wrestling. Y'all can poo-poo on pro wrestling all y'all want, but this is what attracts us to combat sports. Nobody wants to see, let the best man win. Good day, buddy. Ha, ha, ha. I'm your friend. Nobody wants to see that shit. People want to see Stone Cold Steve Austin. People want to see the trash talkers. People want to see the pomp and circumstance. Randy Savage, Jake Roberts, Mr. Perfect, The Rock. Like, you want that kind of a character, and that's exactly what we got. Brock Lesnar is a larger-than-life figure. It's almost cartoonish. He's going to be fighting Daniel Cormier, the dad bod. Let's do it, man. Like, y'all can be mad all you want, but I guarantee y'all going to watch that shit more than you watch Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero.
Oh, hell yeah. Cormier in that fight is going to give everyone, like, Kevin Owens and other just round and proud wrestlers hope that they can one day also beat Brock Lesnar.
Yes. I mean, dude, does Brock Lesnar deserve the title fight?
Hell no.
But here's the funny thing.
He hasn't won since 2012, right?
Right.
Officially? But
the funny thing is, it was made a whole lot easier by Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis shit in the bed. Now, there's really no number one contender. People say Curtis Blaydes. Eh, nobody wants to see Curtis Blaydes fight Daniel Cormier.
Is Ngannou a rap? Like, did Stipe take his soul? Is that because it seems mental? Like, he was a sports psychologist. Like, he was just scared to throw. And he didn't even get knocked out by Stipe.
Right. And that's the crazy thing. Like, oh, you didn't even get knocked out. But the reality is, like, yo, maybe. Maybe Francis Ngannou got pumped up too hard. His ego got the best of him. He's no good. Maybe he's damaged goods. Maybe he's got to go back to the lab and find himself. Maybe he's going to be gunshot for the rest of his career. Don't know.
That's crazy. He has the yips. Like, that's what it looked like. Like, you, when the pitcher just can't find the plate and he's throwing it everywhere, and he'd be like, yo, this guy was throwing 98 mile per hour gas, just killing it. Comes in the next day, takes bullpen, comes out to the field. He can't hit anyone in plate, walks everybody in his mom's. Some people were just done. The yips are a real thing. And I think we saw what could be the MMA equivalent of the yips. Someone who just has amazing knockout power, was just a scary fighter, couldn't knock out one guy, and just has no clue what to do anymore.
True indeed. True indeed.
So that was UFC 226 in a nutshell. Time to kind of move on to other stuff because we have boxing and pro wrestling to talk about. But real quick, Cyborg Nunez, UFC 232. We saw the contract. Does it happen?
I hope so. I don't know which date they're going to pick.
It's a long-ass wait. Like, why don't you just do it the October card in Vegas? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand why either. But it seems like they both want to fight each other. It'll happen. I just don't know when it's going to happen. The bigger question we could talk about it next week, if they finalize this, if Cyborg wins, there's really nothing left. She can retire.
Yeah, but there's a lot of more. Like, she has to make money. What else? She's 31. What is she going to do? She could go box, but women's boxing is not a cash cow.
I'm just saying, there's really
she gets paid a lot more in the UFC than she would in women's boxing.
The problem with the UFC is they take so long finding her an opponent. There's nobody left.
Well, they have an entire Ultimate Fighter class coming in to give her next opponent.
Really?
Really? I mean, we saw DJ wash someone from that. Like, yes. Is there any other reason for this cast of the Ultimate Fighter?
I'm just saying, they're trying to fill out a division, but come on. That's like, I mean, you're just feeding somebody to Cyborg. There's not going to be any, because if there was somebody worthy to fight Cyborg, they wouldn't be on the Ultimate Fighter.
I mean, yeah, that's a fair point. I don't know. There's not that. Well, the worst comes to where she has this. She has the Ultimate Fighter chick to beat up in Holly Holm. If Holly Holm could somehow, you know, go back to 135, find herself, then you have a champion versus champion matchup.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
There's options. You never but this fight is clearly next for both of them because Cyborg has to cash out. Should she aim to be on the same card as McGregor, Khabib, or Brock in DC on the return? Should you co-main that?
No. Just fight where you can.
Really?
Yeah.
I would hold out for the co-main. I was advising her, I'd be like, yo, we saw that this pay-per-view, 226, was a stack card. Cormier versus Miocic, dual championship. It might not break 400K. I say you get a small percentage of pay-per-view points on a Conor card and wait for it as the co-main, then go and try to headline something yourself.
Her ass might be waiting to 2020, so I wouldn't wait.
Conor's not just waiting until 2020.
We don't know when Conor's
He's on the gym and Instagram right now. You don't believe that? Right now. Look at his Instagram. He's sweating bullets. He's cutting weight.
But are they throwing the money at him? He's not fighting without the money.
They're not throwing
that. Again, if you're fighting on the same card as Conor, I guarantee you that Conor's not going to be sharing his pay-per-view points with anybody.
Zero pay-per-view points?
It's like, dog, if Conor McGregor's fighting, people have been eating off of Conor for so long, I guarantee you he's not coming in there like, yeah, I'll share my pay-per-view points with Cyborg. Fuck that. He's going to take it off.
Damn shame. He'd give it like a half point. Like,
why should he? Let's be honest. Conor McGregor's a draw. Like, people all buy it. Like, Conor McGregor could be the only fight on the card, and people will buy it.
Oh, easily. I mean, that's the Mayweather card, right? Like, yeah, what else was there besides that?
Yeah, so there's no sharing.
It's a damn shame. If you can work that, though, you take it and run. Let's talk boxing then real quick. Pacquiao returns this weekend.
Nobody cares.
ESPN Plus. What do you mean nobody cares?
Nobody cares.
It's the Pac-Man. Kevin Ioli, amazing column about Manny Pacquiao. And it's sad as shit. Read it the other day and how everyone around him just did him dirty. He's in a position where he has to keep fighting.
Yeah, but nobody cares. And I just filed my column about Manny Pacquiao's fighting this weekend and nobody cares. Like,
oh, there's a theme to this. Okay. You have a running theme over multiple platforms.
But let's be clear about this. Manny Pacquiao, 3 years ago, fought in the biggest pay-per-view of all time. Now he's fighting on a streaming service that'll be lucky to get to 100,000 people.
Life comes at you fast.
Dog, nobody cares. Like, the illusion of Manny Pacquiao... For me, the illusion of Manny Pacquiao, the wrecking machine, was gone the night he got knocked out by Juan Manuel Marquez. He was never the same again. And he was acting, to be honest, he wasn't the same before that fight when he fought Marquez at Marquez 3.
Yeah, people will argue when he found God, he lost his bite.
Well, he found God and he had his marital issues and he became a guy who wanted to be more humanitarian than a wrecking machine. So he's never been the same. We've been clinging on. Like, people clung on to that all the way up until the Mayweather fight. And then we're pissed off when Mayweather dominated him. But Manny Pacquiao hadn't been Manny Pacquiao for almost 5 years. So now we're at this point where he lost to Jeff Horn, which is made worse by Terrence Crawford annihilating Jeff Horn.
And that was home cooking. That's like we just saw Darren Till beat Wonderboy. He ain't win.
But my point is, there's no, like, Manny Pacquiao, like, Jeff Horn had no business going the distance with Manny Pacquiao.
No.
None.
And Pacquiao had the opportunity to get him out of there and pull
him. And he could. So that's what I'm saying. Like, Terrence Crawford annihilated Jeff Horn. Like, it wasn't even close. There wasn't a close round. There were close rounds in Horn Pacquiao. There was not even a close round in Crawford Horn. Not like the Jesse Vargas fight wasn't necessarily exciting. Like, you even go back to the Chris Algieri fight. He couldn't finish Chris Algieri. Everybody that Manny Pacquiao's fought, with the exception like Jesse Vargas and
Timothy Bradley.
Horn, yeah, but they've all ridden off into the sunset. Floyd Mayweather, Timothy Bradley, Miguel Cotto, Oscar De La Hoya, Ricky Hatton, Juan Manuel Marquez. None of them are fighting anymore.
You look at Pacquiao's losses. He got sneak punched by Marquez, which was an amazing punch. He was winning that fight when it happened. Gets flattened. Cool. Bradley fight, he was robbed. Bradley got that. He ran it back. He whooped his ass. The Horn fight, robbed. He won that fight. The round, I believe it was nice when he almost knocked out Horn. It's clearly a 10-8 round. There's no way that Pacquiao loses those fights. So those are three fights that were decided by one lucky punch and two robberies on a scorecard. Honestly, the man has three losses in his career, if we're judging realistically.
Your point? He's not exciting anymore.
He's not, like, super washed, though. Like, he could win. I don't think he's going to win. I think Matisse beats him. Yeah. But if he wins, I would love to see him fight Bud Crawford. Because you know what? The name still holds weight.
It doesn't. It doesn't. The fact that it's on ESPN Plus is the point that I'm trying to... Like, Vasyl Lomachenko can fight on ESPN. And Manny Pacquiao, who 3 years ago fought in the biggest pay-per-view of all time, is on ESPN Plus?
He can still sell pay-per-views if it wasn't for the fact he doesn't want to fight in the States.
No, he can't. The Jesse Vargas pay-per-view did terrible. Terrible. Manny Pacquiao is not a draw anymore because Manny Pacquiao, the guise of Manny Pacquiao destroying people is gone. Nobody cares about Manny Pacquiao. Terrence Crawford beats Manny Pacquiao. He beat a washed-up Manny Pacquiao. There's a little bit of weight to that name, but like I think Manny Pacquiao beats Lucas Matisse because the reason why he's fighting Matisse is Matisse is a stationary opponent who is also over the hill, who got knocked out by Victor Postol two fights ago, and he's beatable. But, dude, Manny Pacquiao's fighting for money. He's not fighting to win. He's not fighting to be the best. He's fucking training with Bubway Fernandez, not the gross.
Yeah.
Like, the point is, like, Manny Pacquiao cares less about his boxing career than we do. He just wants a check. Manny Pacquiao's not training. Like, he's not a full-time fighter.
He needs the check.
He needs the check. And it's amazing. The man got paid $120 million on the downside against Floyd Mayweather. And he needs money.
Listen, what? People are arguing Conor McGregor's doing the same, all headed on the same path.
But Conor McGregor had one $99 million payday. Manny Pacquiao had one $120 million payday and a bunch of 10, 15, $20 million paydays.
Yeah, what, man. Bob was working magic back there with the pen.
Not even that. He had a gambling issue. Like, Manny, like, it's well documented. Manny Pacquiao's always had a gambling issue. But the point is that his interests are not boxing. They are humanitarian, politician, actor, singer, religion, father, then boxing.
Basketball player.
Yeah, like, everything but boxing. So this weekend, his talent, like, and when it comes crashing down, it comes crashing down fast. Like, he could be old tomorrow night or Saturday night and get wrecked by Lucas Matisse. It's possible. His unique ability and talent is still there, where he can be a crafty seasoned veteran, but that wrecking machine that made us love him is long gone. There's no appeal to Manny Pacquiao anymore.
Well, I hope he wins and we get the Bud fight, just because I think Bud needs somebody, anybody.
I don't want to see Manny Pacquiao go out like that. I really don't.
I do. You got to go out on his shield.
No, I don't.
You got to put the next guy over.
That time has passed. Like, he should have did it three fights ago.
He should have. The Joe Horn fight should have been Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, but now it doesn't matter. To me, it just does not matter.
I think to some casuals, it'll help Bud. Let's talk about WWE before we have to get out of here. I mean, listen, we don't got to talk much about it. We just got to talk about it. Because we have a pay-per-view this weekend. First off, Raw had the worst ratings ever.
I'm not surprised.
That shit's horrible. But Roman Reigns is still your flagship guy, starting the Raws and ending them.
Dude, let me just make this point before we start talking about it. Raw and SmackDown are, again, I think I'm validating my point now about the storytelling is the worst that it's probably ever been. they're so bad, but NXT and 205 Live have been incredibly good.
Incredibly good.
How does this happen?
You have a changing of the guard, but on one end, someone won't give it up. And you can't bully it. Like, Vince used money and persuasion to, not in a bad way, but to bully his father out of the company. He saw the change and said, no, I need this. I will pay you off to get the hell out of here. And he did. Now it's that next revolution in life where someone has to bully Vince out of the company and that person is there. Like, it was very public. It was like Triple H got control of 205 Live. Oh, let's see what Trips does with it. Yo, that shit's been great. NXT is Trips' like little pet project, his baby. It's been great. It'll have its lows, but he always picks it back up out of it. He surrounded himself with the other smart people his age, and he lets them work. Vince at once upon a time did the same. You can say whatever you want about his relationship with Paul Heyman, with Russo. Like, he's let other people take control and kind of write shit and roll with it. He doesn't do that anymore. Like, he has the wrong people around him. It's time for a change in the guard.
So you're still blaming solely Vince McMahon. So you think Triple H will come
in? No. I think it's institutional. Like, I think it's just the point of it's Triple H and the people around him and fresh new ideas that helps everything Trips touches. And it's just true. Like, 205 was in a wreck. Enzo was fired. You had no clue what was happening. Trips got it, and the people around him, he's smart enough to let those people be them. I don't think Vince McMahon is at the point anymore where he's letting the people around him run the show and trusting them. Triple H trusts everyone else. You look at the William Regals. He just hired the guy in the UK to be UK GM. He's going to do one hell of a job with that product. His name escapes me for a second. But UK legend to run that. You look at bringing in Sean full-time. Yo, Sean, come here. You can lend something to these guys in NXT. And his impact on the Adam Coles and the storytelling and everything. Like, he's not afraid to surround himself with smart or smarter people. Mauro, you don't have to go. Just come do NXT. Do this product. He understands that it takes other smart and talented people to win. Trips arguably has made his career off of people more talented than him. And he's known just, okay, let me just play my role. And he's doing that now. Vince, I don't think, is doing that on the main roster. It's like, these are the guys in blah, 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 blah. Do this. We've done this for 50 years. It works. Like, no, kid. It doesn't work anymore. Like, Vince, it's time for someone to say, yo, Vince, we got this. Us as a collective got this. You don't have to do the day-to-day. You don't have to do everything. You don't have to be in Gorilla every show. We got it.
Yeah, I don't think that matters. I mean, it does to a certain extent. But like I've said before, as long as Stephanie's there and they're shareholders, this television product, I don't think is going to change very much.
Well, the shareholders are not going away. Like, it's a publicly traded company. Like, it's done. They've sailed down that.
But that's my point, is that the reason why NXT and 205 Live works is because it's not being restricted by shareholders or public television or nothing like that. It's the reason why Netflix is getting all these Emmy nominations, is because they have the freedom to do what they want on their platform where people pay to subscribe to. But if Netflix tried to get those shows on television, they'd have a lot harder of a time because network television is different. Yeah. The rules are different.
Commercials, advertisers, people putting their hands in.
Yeah, so it's like, it sucks, man, because it's like, it comes at a point in time where it's like, well, what do you do? Because you're going to Fox next year in this massive deal. I can't see it getting much better anytime soon.
Well, and I don't see it getting much worse. Which I might regret saying that.
Yeah, I'm just saying, well, yeah, you might. But whether it's Vince, whether it's Stephanie, there's always going to be a McMahon in that role that's going to uphold the values of what the advertisers want. Because the fact that it stole for that much to a network, being as poor as it is right now, says a lot. Because they're not buying NXT. They're not buying 205 Live.
Nope.
They're buying the current product.
They're buying Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar's.
Like, I don't know if they could turn it around, man, but, like, 205 Live and NXT have been exceptional. But that's me. Like, this is how I grew up. I was a ECW fan because the fact was, or an underground hip-hop fan because there were no rules. Once you got signed to a label, there were rules. You had to make your hit for the ladies. You had to make your hit for the club. There were rules. WWE is restricted by those rules. And I don't know if that shit's ever going to change. And I hate it. Because everybody gets called up. gets drowned out. It's like your favorite underground rapper gets signed to that major label, and either his album never comes out, or it comes out and it's like, what the fuck is this? Like Royce About Nine. When Rock City came out on Tommy Boy Records, people were like, what the fuck is this? We're doing songs with Willa Ford, but that's what happens when you sign to a major.
Yeah.
He had to go back. Like Cody Rhodes had to go back to the independent scene to make his name. I don't know how the WWE is going to get through this, but as long as you're still selling and people are still watching it, I think we're going to be stuck with a pretty shitty product.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's then beats the brakes because it's not going backwards. It's only going to keep going forwards. It's only going to be more money pumped into it, more people with more control.
Yeah.
Because now Fox is going to have a say. USA still has their say. Don't let, you know, NXT go to FS1. That'll change the product a little. Now they have NXT UK that'll probably take that spot. There's now like six different angles you're being pulled in. More people with their hands in the pot trying to stir this thing. So they, I don't know, but sooner or later they have to recognize that the overall product, numbers don't lie. Understand how you sell and everything, but sooner or later you have to hit your numbers. And if your numbers are just plummeting to all-time low levels, you can't ignore it. You may not have competition to overtake you, but you can't ignore it. Sooner or later, you got to push yourself and raise those numbers. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, maybe Roman Reigns could be the guy.
Yeah, right. we got like 15 minutes left, so yeah. I want to run through the Extreme Rules card real quick, but then I want to talk about G1 because G1 starts this weekend, and we have the card to talk about from this past weekend.
All right, let's talk about Extreme Rules then. Let's run through the card really quick.
I don't know what the main event is.
Well, you know what the main event is. Stop playing.
No, I don't.
You do know. Everyone knows. You don't like it, but you know.
I don't know.
It's Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns. Spoiler alert. And it's okay. Not an Extreme Rules match. It's nothing else. It's just these two going. I expect Roman to go over on Lashley, setting up another match against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam.
And I guess that's where we're starting, huh?
That's the product of shitty writing. Yes, that's my prediction. Case closed. Yeah. Easiest match to predict on this card.
I think you're probably right, but it makes very little sense to bring Lashley here and have him lose this match. But I get why they would do it. It's weird because usually we would bring in the new guy and have him go over on the old guy, but now they're going to bring in the new guy and have the old guy go over on him. So whatever. Yeah, Roman Reigns. Fuck it.
So there goes your main event. Quick and easy. Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax, Extreme Rules match. I actually expect this to be a decent match. Once again, big people who aren't that technical, you give them a good stipulation, it should be all right. There'll be some shenanigans. I think Alexa still maintains the belt.
Yeah, Alexa retains. Ronda will be ringside.
Ronda probably wrecks both of them at the end of it.
Maybe, something to that degree. But yeah, I think Alexa retains. Yeah. It sucks, man. I don't know what the hell they're doing with Nia Jax. One day she's a babyface, next week she's a heel. Now she's hanging out with Natalya. This is all stupid.
Yeah, it's very weird. Well, she has to be the face to Alexa, but a heel to everyone else.
Whatever.
Yeah. Nonetheless, Ronda interjects herself in this match and looks like the star of the show. Because it's on Raw, it's all about Ronda Rousey. It just is. Then we have AJ Styles versus Rusev. WWE Championship match, no stipulation. I expect this to be one hell of a match. Rusev can go. He's going to remind people of that. AJ Styles is AJ Styles. So they're going to have the match of the night. AJ Styles retains. He's not dropping this anytime soon.
I agree. I don't think this will be match of the night, but I think this. I think AJ Styles will retain a pretty good match with Rusev.
Oh, old man Andreas, you do not see the rest of this card.
I'll tell you what it's going to be. Okay. But go ahead.
But Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt versus the B team. Is this it? This year, match of the night?
No.
Surprisingly, I want the B team to win, man. I do. Those promos are hilarious. But I think this is their like one little bit. Matt and Bray retain.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think they're finally going to push the Revival. So I fully expect the Revival to be involved in this and get the titles off of Matt and Bray at some point.
Thank God, because Authors of Pain has to do something. I don't expect the Revival to get the push, but I think Authors of Pain, they've been saving them. I think they come out and wreck Hardy and Wyatt when this is done, starting their feud.
Oh, maybe. Again, I don't know, and I don't care. Anyway.
Yep. Carmella versus Asuka. James Ellsworth in a shark cage. God, worst know. Match of the night. Carmelo loses. Ellsworth throws the little powder shit that he blew in her face last week. He throws it down. Carmelo uses that to beat Asuka again. Asuka's winning the belt, but not until SummerSlam, because the WWE main roster only knows how to do 3 storylines, and they want us to be sympathetic about Asuka losing and building up into a champion. She didn't need that shit. She just needed to crush Carmella. It's gone 3 months too far, but that's what's going to happen. Asuka's going to lose again. She's going to get pinned again after not being pinned for damn near 3 years and go into SummerSlam in the challenger's role.
I don't even want to predict this. This is disgusting. If Asuka loses again to Carmella, which I fully think
she is.
Just throw the shovel at her. Just send her back to NXT.
No, dude. She's like, going to be champion. SummerSlam. She's going
to
be champion.
But at that point, I just don't care. Like, I like her being champion, but to be vulnerable to Carmella is whack. You know, it's funny. This card has no Charlotte, and I can't remember a pay-per-view.
She's injured. Charlotte. She just had surgery, like minor surgery. She hasn't been wrestling at all.
Okay. Well, there's that.
Yeah. So that'll clear up in like a month or two. So she'll be back. Then we have Bludgeon Brothers versus Team Hell No.
Kane takes the pin.
Okay, good. I don't think Team Hell No needs the belts.
They don't.
But we're just killing time until this Daniel Bryan Miz feud that I guess they want to save for WrestleMania.
Who knows? But yeah, Kane should take the pin here. I just hope that they don't start another Daniel Bryan Kane feud. I just, like, Kane should take the pin here. Bludgeon Brothers shouldn't lose the titles. I could see them wanting to do this, but they shouldn't. The Bludgeon Brothers should remain the champions.
Yeah, I feel the same. Ziggler versus Seth Rollins, this year match of the night.
That's my match of the night.
30-minute Iron Man match. Ziggler retains because Drew McIntyre is on the side. Sooner or later, I thought this feud was built to have Dean Ambrose come back and help.
Possible.
If Ambrose can come back and neutralize McIntyre, then Seth wins. If not, Ziggler wins due to McIntyre's interference.
I'm going to pick Seth here. Just because I think it'll just be a great match with that. The interference will be early, but not early. I don't think it'll have a bearing on the end. I'm just kind of surprised that Drew McIntyre is not the one in the feud with Roman Reigns and going over. It just seems like that's where this should be heading. Like, Drew McIntyre is looking great.
Oh, he is money. He didn't need NXT at all, to be honest. They could have just put him on main roster.
Damn, Samoa Joe's on this card either? Carry on.
Yeah, he's waiting. Hardy versus Nakamura. Shinsuke with the win.
He should, because he's lost all these damn title matches, so he should beat Jeff Hardy. But I'm not sure of it. I'm actually going to say Jeff Hardy's going to win. They extend this feud for whatever reason.
Okay.
Because there's no heat on this feud, really. They just kind of show up and beat each other up. And
well, Nakamura got bit by the dog.
Yeah.
By the police dog.
That's why I feel like they'll kind of extend this thing, but whatever. Yeah. I'm going to pick Jeff Hardy.
Less than 8 minutes for that match, by the way. Mm. And that's all I'm giving them. Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin. Seems like a pre-show match. I'll go Finn Balor.
Yeah, me too.
Kevin Owens versus Braun Strowman, steel cage.
I think Kevin Owens wins. Like, there's ways to...
Oh, because, he can just squeeze out of the cage. He doesn't have to pin him.
He'll escape. I think Kevin Owens will escape and win this match.
Okay. Then it elongates the feud. I wouldn't mind seeing him go again at SummerSlam. Why not? And then that is a good match to have for Braun to open up the match so he can cash in later. And then New Day versus Sanity, tables match, Sanity wins.
Hey, I feel like Sanity's going to get the push here. Why not, right?
Yeah, New Day doesn't need it. Like, really,
they really don't.
So, all right, that is the WWE for this weekend. That's a lot of fucking wrestling on one card, by the way.
Yes, it is.
New Japan Pro Wrestling. Real quick, we'll recap last week's show, and then maybe we'll do our G1 preview next week.
Yeah.
They were in the Bay Area. Biggest thing that steps out to me before we go through some of the cool matches is Takahashi.
Yeah. That bump, I don't know if he's broken his neck or not. It's amazing they could finish the match. They said he flew back to Japan. I hope he comes back, man, because if you guys listen to the show, I'm a big Takahashi fan. His feud with Dragon Lee has been going on forever. This is not something that should have happened, but it did. It sucks.
But this was his year. This was his push.
It was.
And that spot made no sense to me. It was unnecessary. Because even if you pull it off clean, what does it add?
They've done it a million times, though. So that's the thing. It's a tough bump because it's like the pile driver, right? When they used to do pile drivers all the time. Like, if you do it wrong, you're going to hurt somebody. And Dragon Lee, he didn't get full rotation on the suplex and threw him right on his head. It sucks. And, you know, there has to be a conversation about some of the things that happen to protect these guys. Like
they're almost on a one-year average with losing people.
Yeah, because, you know, we lost we're losing wrestlers at a high rate. And from freak accidents to things that you look at and you're like, damn, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, accumulation of blows, like what's-his-face in New Japan, who we haven't seen since.
Yeah, I mean, Shibata.
To the accumulation. Like, they're on a one-year average. They're damn near losing someone.
Yeah, and I mean, the WWE's not doing any better. You just lost Paige on some freak shit where she can't wrestle anymore. It's like, shit happens, man.
Yeah.
Shit happens.
Yeah, so that was crazy. The juice is loose.
Oh, man, I love it. Like, I love this match.
It was a good match. I can't even hate on it. I'm still not a Juice Robinson fan, but man, it was a good match.
You gotta stop hating on Juice.
No, I don't like the character. Like, you know, he's the male Bailey. No, I'm good. I'll pass on it. He's man Bailey.
But the bigger thing that comes out of this match, and not talking about the JR bump, is that Jay White is a really fucking good heel. He's a really good heel. The fact that he lost the US title means nothing. He'll probably get it back at some point, but. Man, I mean, the way he played the JR bump and
running Barnett, away from Barnett.
it was so good. This is a guy who was just a young lion a couple years ago, and now he's a full-fledged heel. And I love this match. I love the way this was booked. I loved Juice getting the win. I thought it was well-booked. It was well-handled.
Yeah, they're doing well with him. Switchblade, I think he has a clear path. Like, to me, this is where Omega was in, like, 15. When he had the sweeper gimmick and he was the cleaner and everything, and he was just on that fringe, like, okay, he just got to take the gimmick to the next level. We'll see if White is able to do it, but they're putting him in position. If New Japan has a blueprint, he's on that role. And then main event, Cody versus Kenny.
Ah, you didn't talk about Young Bucks and LIJ.
Oh, excuse me, Young Bucks, LIJ, good match. Well, but the Bucks put on good matches every time. What's the last time a bad Bucks match?
You don't really see bad Young Bucks matches. I just like talking about them.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, come on, this is expected. Like, what do you expect going into it?
They're the best tag team on the planet. Like, it's just everything they do is just easily. So good.
Anyway, NXT has some good tag team matches, but theirs seem like plug and play. Like, it's really good writing and booking for their tag team matches. No, the Bucks are just, when they got to get busy, especially in New Japan, when they can have some psychology, they're the best in the world. And then Cody versus Kenny.
I enjoyed this match, but it was 5 to 10 minutes too long.
It was an average match. Somehow, Cody's the only person that pulls average matches out of Kenny.
No, that's not true.
It had good spots. This had better spots than their last one. The ladder spot with the suplex, everything cool, blah, blah. There was some intrigue going through. The selling of the one-wing angel, all this cool. It was average, slightly above average match.
Okay. But bottom line is,
he's Kenny's worst feud this year. Like, it is. No, it's true.
It's absolutely fine. Not Kenny's worst feud. He's only
in ring.
Fine. Okay. Fine, whatever you say. Like I said it before, like before the Okada matches, Kenny didn't have like a great in ring in 2018.
He did a pretty good showing last summer in G1.
Well, I said in 2018, not 17.
Oh, 18, okay.
Yeah, and the Cody match, I didn't think this was a bad match. I just think the problem with the match is we knew Kenny was going to win, and it went 5 to 10 minutes too long.
Better or worse than the Jericho match?
Worse.
It's okay, you say it was worse.
Yeah, but I mean, that was Wrestle Kingdom also. Like, you fully expect, like, the big show, like, that was going to be arguably the best match on the card. There was no doubt about that.
Yeah, I just feel like I don't know. Cody, though, on the mic, character-wise, all that stuff, still big ups to him. I've always said he's a great character. WWE, whatever character they gave him, he's a great character. Dash and Cody Rhodes. Like, it's just his style, and I can't even blame it on WWE style. His style of wrestling just doesn't do it for him.
Yeah.
But I feel like Goldust has, like, a similar style. Like, it's that old school, like, Texas down south wrestling. It's just not for me. But still, we had a good storyline carryover. Bullet Club. Looked like those two came back together, and we had the OG Bullet Club, a.k.a. the Samoans, a.k.a. whatever they're calling themselves now. They had new
Firing
T-shirts.
Firing Squad
with the guns and everything. Looks like we're going to have Bullet Club Firing Squad versus Bullet Club US, like whatever they're going to call it. the golden bullets. I don't know.
I don't know what the hell. I mean, you have the Golden Elite and you have the Firing Squad. The Firing Squad feels like they got to add Bad Luck Fale. It's the only way this is really going to work because the Gorillas of Destiny alone can't do it. But it seems like Tama Tonga is also going to be in for a big push at a certain point. But I said this like 2 years ago. He looks like the guy that was going to get a push.
Is he
push
a G1?
Yes, he is. I believe he is.
Tama Tonga might be a sleepy. Hey,
No. Look, real quick. Naito's winning G1. That's it. There's really nowhere else they're going to go with this.
I feel like that's how it should be. But, you know, this little planning is a nice little swerve. Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk more in New Japan next week when G1 comes up. We got to get out of here. Thank you guys for listening. It was a great hour and a half podcast. Hit us up on social media at The Corner LSN on all platforms. Me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hill. Next week, we'll be back with recapping all of this stuff, plus some fresh new content, previewing G1 for New Japan. And we're going to get an old man Andreas story just for shits and giggles. He'll be in New York, but we'll still make it happen. Thank you guys for listening. For now, we're out.
Peace.